This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton, local author, historian, and cartographer, joins us in studio for a little history discussion, and we invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070. Happy New Year, Rick.
Yeah, Happy New Year. What do you think of this crazy weather?
It's like spring, isn't it?
It's weird.
I was on the phone with Allison. She said, I have the windows open.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. What?
Maybe there's something to what Al Gore's been trying to tell us all these years.
What's he trying to say?
You know, global warming.
I never saw that movie. Did you see that movie?
Actually, I did.
What'd you think?
I did. I was really impressed. It was not the guy that had run for president. It was not the guy who had been vice president of the United States. I mean, he actually had a personality. He could actually tell jokes, and he seemed intelligent. It's incredible. I was really amazed, actually. I thought he was great.
I don't think any of those...
vice president, you have to be intelligent.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I don't think any
but
of those guys are dummies.
Personality.
But...
it was incredible.
Yeah, he really, that
it,
hasn't
it's really
come
worth
across.
Going to see. I would encourage people to see it.
Well,
I
most everybody I have talked to who has seen the movie has said, wow, it really was
it
much
really
more
is.
Than I had expected.
It really is. It really is. And he's not heavy-handed with the way he presents it either. He just, in a matter of fact way.
It's not a doomsday kind of thing.
Yeah, in a matter of fact way, here's what we know. Look at this, look at this, look at this chart. It's impressive and it's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have to check it out.
Yeah.
What's going on with you? You're working on a book, a Jefferson book, aren't you?
I am. You know, over the years, I've written a lot of articles about Jefferson and Monticello, different aspects of his life. And what I'm doing now, and I'm almost finished. I've only got three left. I'm taking those articles, different essays, and I'm beefing up into chapters. And I just finished one on a pretty obscure aspect of Jefferson's life, the Freeman and Custis expedition of 1806. Nobody knows about this expedition.
The who and the what and the when?
The Thomas Freeman.
I don't know anything about this.
The Thomas Freeman and Peter Custis expedition from April to July of 1806. Get this. It was actually larger, had more people in it, and was more expensive in appropriations than the Lewis and Clark expedition. They went up the Red River, 615 miles from the Mississippi into present-day Texas. But it was intercepted by a Spanish army and turned back. You see, Spain at the time, the boundaries of Louisiana, especially the southwest boundaries of Louisiana, were in dispute. The Spanish thought that the southern border of the Louisiana Territory was actually the Arkansas River, which is quite a bit north of the Red River. The French, who sold Spain to us, of course, sold Louisiana to us. They thought that Louisiana included all of Texas. So that whole area, that whole boundary in the southwest of the Louisiana Territory was in dispute. So here come these guys, you know, here come 47 guys, 47 Americans. The vast majority of them were armed soldiers, you know, U.S. Regulars, up the Red River, and the Spanish got upset.
I guess so.
Yeah, well, little known fact, too, is the Spanish were upset about Lewis and Clark three times out of their military headquarters in Chihuahua, in present-day Mexico. Three times they sent military forces to intercept Lewis and Clark.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did they ever
no, they
attack
never,
them?
No, they never caught up with them. And I don't think they came within hundreds of miles of Lewis and Clark, but they caught up
but
with Freeman.
But they were looking for him.
But they were looking for him, and they caught up with Freeman and Custis.
Well, before you tell us what happened when they caught up with him, give us the backstory on this, because Jefferson was president at the time.
Jefferson, it was during his second administration.
And Lewis and Clark, they took off in 1804, right?
1804, so they were already out. They were already out there. But the interesting thing about it is, you know, most people think that that's the expedition. Actually, there were many expeditions. There was an expedition under William Dunbar and a guy by the name of Hunter that went up the Wichita, which is in present-day state of Louisiana and southern Arkansas. There were two expeditions under Zebulon Pike. So there were a number of expeditions, but Jefferson's plan for Louisiana was to explore all of the major rivers. All of the major rivers that fed into the Mississippi. Lewis and Clark, of course, went up the Missouri and then, of course, down the Columbia to the Pacific coast. But the other two major streams that he was the most interested in were the Arkansas and the Red River. The only problem was the Spanish were determined to stop anything that went up the Red River. And yet he dispatched this this expedition up the Red River. And so one of the reasons we know nothing about it today is because it was suppressed. It was a major political embarrassment to the Jefferson administration, and all of these American lives were in risk going out there into a part of the boundary that was disputed.
And these were all expeditions under his leadership, right? Post Louisiana Purchase, when he said, okay, we bought this, but we really don't know what's out there.
Exactly. Yeah, he wanted all of this detailed information. And one of the reasons ostensibly that he sent these guys out there was to figure out what the actual boundary of Louisiana was. You know, it's not as if when we bought Louisiana, all of the boundaries were determined. They used things like rivers, which of course change their course, but also headwaters. And headwaters are debatable lots of times as to where this river really begins. Where does it begin? Does it begin in this stream over here? Or, you know, 100 miles away in this other stream? What are the exact headwaters? So boundaries were in question. They aren't definite things like they are today.
Right, right.
That's the fascination that I have with this, and of course the fact that nobody today knows about it. Really, there is only, 200 years later, there's only one book-length, piece, treatise, on the expedition. Usually it only warrants a chapter in a book about Western exploration, or even just, you know, not even part of a chapter.
Well, we're raised believing that you bought Louisiana Purchase, and it was St. Louis and Clark out there to sort of explore the Louisiana territory.
But when you think about it, and
we're never told there was anybody else.
Yeah, no, and see, this is what gets me is that the idea that we could get 828,000 square miles and yet one expedition could be expected, you know, that we would think as Americans that one expedition would explore 828,000 square miles. It doubled the size of the United States, when actually Lewis and Clark were just the northernmost expedition.
Were they the most?
Freeman and
Custis, the farthest as well?
They went the farthest.
Yeah.
But Freeman and Custis were supposed to go the entire length of the Red River, would have been a little over 1,000 miles. So it would have been close to what Lewis and Clark did. The thing is that Lewis and Clark was the northernmost expedition. Zebulon Pike and Dunbar and Hunter went in the center of Louisiana. Freeman and Custis explored the southern part of Louisiana. So that's why they're called today the Southern Lewis and Clark, or the Lewis and Clark of the South. Isn't that fascinating?
It is. It really is. We're talking with Rick Britton. He's a local author and historian working on a book about Thomas Jefferson. What would have been the process? Would Jefferson literally call people into the White House and say, okay, this is where I want you to go, or was that handled for him?
Well, that's a great question. Here's the thing. What he would do is he would get in touch with people on the frontier that would feed him back information. As everybody knows, Jefferson, the farthest west he went was just the Shenandoah Valley when he was practicing law. So, you know, he had correspondence. So the guy who actually directed the expedition for Jefferson was William Dunbar, a Scotsman who had a plantation in Natchez, which is on the Mississippi River. At the time, it was in Mississippi Territory. And this guy was considered a frontier scientist. And he was a botanist. He was a naturalist. He was into geology. And he also sent in Jefferson information about the Red River, but also the Indians of Southwest Virginia. So Jefferson got him to organize and direct the whole Freeman and Custis expedition. And it was Dunbar himself with Hunter who explored the Wichita.
Now, before we go to a break, set this up where these guys are out there. When did they start? What did the crew look like? And then sort of set us up to the point of contact with the Spanish.
Okay. They started from the Mississippi River. They started from a fort, an American fort on the Mississippi, Fort Adams, that was on the east bank of the Mississippi. So it was still in the United States territory prior to Louisiana. And Thomas Freeman had been born in Ireland, and he was a surveyor and a civil engineer. He had worked actually in Washington, D.C. He was one of the surveyors that laid out Washington, D.C. in the 1790s. So he was the head of the expedition. As his second was a medical student from the University of Pennsylvania by the name of Peter Custis. And you might think, well, why send a medical student? Well, medical students learned that he was also a naturalist, and which meant that he had to study botany, he had to study geology, he had to study chemistry, and he had studied under probably the foremost naturalist in the United States at the time, whose name was Benjamin Smith Barton, who was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. So many famous scientists were working as professors.
It's similar to the Lewis and Clark thing, where one is an experienced explorer, the other one is a bit of a naturalist.
Exactly. And the thing about Thomas Freeman, exactly, is that he had spent part of his life growing up with the Shawnee Indians. So he had been out into the frontier and knew a little bit about all that kind of stuff. So attached to them were all these French and Indian Native American guides and interpreters, and then a really significant contingent of U.S. soldiers. And people have theorized that perhaps they understood that they might have a confrontation with the Spanish, and these guys were prepared to fight. The only thing was, you know, they had 47 men. When the Spanish finally caught up with them 615 miles up the Red River, the Spanish showed up with over 200. So they were outnumbered over 4-1. So there's no question these guys had to turn back.
We're talking with Rick Britton. Let's take a very quick break. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA. We're having a little bit of challenge here, and we'll get that taken care of as soon as we can. Meanwhile, let's continue the discussion with Rick Britton. Where exactly are we with this crew? And when what's going on? When are we? Where are we? And it set the scene for us.
Okay, it's the spring of 1806, and they departed Fort Adams, and they went upriver, up the Red River. And I don't know if folks in Virginia, I certainly wasn't, are familiar with the Red River, but it's huge. The mouth of the Red River, where it enters the Mississippi, which is in central Louisiana, was half a mile wide. So this is a huge river. It maintained that width for about 30 miles to where the Black River comes into it. The Red River, just really quickly, is about 1,000 miles long. It starts in present-day New Mexico, cuts across the panhandle of North Texas, then becomes the southern border, the border between Oklahoma and Texas.
Okay.
Then it crosses into southwest Arkansas and kind of laterally cuts across Louisiana and finally enters the Mississippi. It was one of the major streams feeding the Mississippi River.
So you could get on this river at the Mississippi in Louisiana and go to New Mexico.
Absolutely, but you had to pole upriver.
Okay.
Now, it wasn't navigable all the way. They took some specially designed flatboats that only drew a little bit of water. They only drew about 20 inches of water because they knew in places there were going to be problems. But one of the fascinating things about the story is about halfway up, about 300 miles up, they encountered what was known as the Great Raft, and it was actually a log jam on the Red River that was 100 miles long that completely blocked up the river, a log jam. Now imagine that. Some of the early geologists have theorized that this was created when a huge flood on the Mississippi actually backed up the flow of the Red River. So what happened was, where that log jam was, it had caused the river to find all kinds of other passages, you know, connecting lakes and bayous and swamps. And so they had to totally bypass the Great Raft.
So they're going upriver, and they hit just a bunch of logs in the river?
A huge log jam. I mean, the log jam was so old, it went from the bottom of the river, which there was about 20 feet deep. It went from the bottom of the river to 3 feet above the surface of the water. Trees were growing on this log jam.
And it was 100 miles long?
100 miles long. Of course, it was divided up into sections, but some geologists think that this thing was created in 1100 A.D. So this thing was very, very old, the beginnings of it.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
so that's another fascinating part about the story. Yeah.
So they get around this.
They get around that. They finally came to the last, what was considered the last white outpost, on the Red River, just a few miles beyond that. And beyond that, it was total wilderness. It was the region controlled by the Caddo Indian Nation, who I'd never heard of before. It's spelled C-A-D-D-O.
And where is this?
Luckily, this would be now in Texas and Oklahoma.
Okay.
That's the Caddo Indian Nation. Luckily, they were very friendly. They stayed over, and then from the Caddos, they heard that the Spanish were after them. The Spanish had all kinds of posts in what were then East Texas, and the Spanish sent two military forces. Actually, the smaller one is the one that finally caught up with Freeman and Custis.
And caught up with them where?
Caught up with them. It's the site is called Spanish Bluff today. It's in present-day Bowie County, Texas, and it's 615 miles up the Red River.
So they got 615 miles. Were they doing the kind of thing like that Lewis and Clark were doing, where they were collecting specimens and drawing pictures in their journal?
And I got a copy of the journals, so I was able to quote from the journals on this chapter. And there's some fascinating stuff. I mean, they found some very interesting flora and fauna, some things that weren't native to the east coast of the United States. The Great Raft, I think, is probably the most fascinating thing that they encountered, because we really didn't know about that. And it wasn't for another 50 or 60 years until the engineers, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, blew up the Great Raft so that the entire river for the entire length was navigable. They also encountered a lot of Indians along the way and made friends with the tribes, which was a positive aspect, despite the fact that they failed, because the United States eventually would win them over as allies, all these Indian nations along the Red River. And in every bend in the river, they had to stop and take sextant readings so that they could produce an accurate and it's very accurate map of the Red River to accompany their journals. But it's a fascinating, fascinating story.
So what happened to them when the Spanish caught up with them?
Well, the Spanish were under orders to halt them and to use force if necessary. So here they are, and they're on this beach.
This is in present-day Texas.
Present-day.
The Spanish.
Bowie County, Texas.
After the Louisiana Purchase.
After the Louisiana Purchase.
When
1806.
The Spanish could care less what transpired between Napoleon and Jefferson.
Yeah, no, but they cared a lot for a couple of reasons. For one.
But, I mean, they could care less if Jefferson said, hey, we own this.
Right, except that they thought that they owned it.
Right, yes.
They thought that they owned it, and also that they thought the Americans were out there, that one of the reasons was to instigate all of the Native Americans and turn them against the Spanish. And the Spanish also thought that the American nation was imperialistic in nature and would eventually come and take all of Mexico, too, you know, which we did, but we didn't keep. We turned it back over to the people of Mexico a couple of generations later.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what happened? Was anybody killed?
Nobody was killed, but there was this huge confrontation, and they're standing there with cocked rifles. The Spanish show up with cavalry. The river at this point is very meandering and has a beach on either side, so there they are. Their two flat-bottom boats are parked on this beach. They're cooking dinner. All of a sudden, here comes a column down the beach of Spanish cavalry, 150 cavalry and about 60 infantry behind them.
God, and they're charging to kill, or are they just investigating?
They're cantering forward, and, if they'd gotten close enough, it looked like they were about to charge, but the American sentinels, the pickets out front, bid them to halt, and Freeman ordered the rest of the infantrymen up on the bank, which is about 30 feet high right there, and they were protected by a cane brake and heavy timber. So they could have defended themselves pretty well, but still they are outnumbered about 4-1 in total. And the Spanish commander there, Captain Viana, told them that he was under order to halt them, and if they insisted on proceeding, he was going to shoot at them. He was going to fire.
This is the Spanish talking to the Americans.
Uh-huh. And Thomas Freeman said, well, my orders are from President Jefferson, and I'm to investigate the river, and he wants me to go all the way to the headwaters of the Red, which would have been another 500 miles because they'd only come 600 miles. And then he said to Viana, he said, well, will you tell me under whose authority you have these orders? Will you put it in writing? Put it in writing for me, because I want to know who said that we were to halt and what authority that person had. And Viana refused, and then looking him straight in the eye and said, will you turn back, and when are you going to turn back? This, of course, through an interpreter. So Freeman thinks about it for a while. He's outnumbered 4-1. The Spanish are right there, heavily armed. And he says, okay, well, we'll remain in this position one day, and we'll turn back tomorrow.
Wow. So what was the result? They went back to Louisiana?
They went all the way back to Fort Adams on the Mississippi, where they'd started. Freeman, for the rest of his life, got a lot of really prominent appointments as surveyor. He ended up dying, I think it was in 1824, in Huntsville, Alabama. But I think that Jefferson felt like he owed him a lot, and so Jefferson made sure that Freeman got all these significant appointments for the rest of his life, so he got good jobs. Custis went back to school, finished his medical degree, and then evidently he was fed up with exploring, fed up with government jobs, and then moved to New Bern, North Carolina, where he lived out his life as a physician in New Bern, North Carolina.
And of course all the journals and maps and all that got back to Jefferson.
Yeah, and they were published, but they were suppressed because this was a big embarrassment. This came, so close to sparking a war between the United States and Spain. And it's arguable that in 1806 we might have lost a war against Spain.
Yeah. So they didn't really publicize this mission. These guys were out there. They risked their lives.
And of Freeman's journals, which are fantastic, the guy's a great writer, of his journals, fewer than a dozen copies remain today.
And this is amazing.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. I mean, it's a totally forgotten, great story.
Forgotten. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that is something else. Rick Britton is our guest, local author and historian, and talented cartographer. What's your website again? I always encourage folks to see your
work. www.rickbritton.com, and Britton is Britton.
And this, we were talking during the break, this is actually a 200th anniversary of a very famous Virginian.
Yeah, the birth of Robert E. Lee, yeah, in 1806. Next month, I'm going to be working on an article for a friend of mine who has a huge Lee project. He has the Lee Family Digital Archive. He's working out of Lexington. And I'm going to be doing an article for his website on Robert E. Lee, the engineer, an aspect of his life, of course, that was really overshadowed by his military career, which is what he's famous for. But as an engineer, the big project, and this is what I'm going to focus on, is diverting the waters of the Mississippi River at St. Louis. St. Louis was being threatened because a sandbar was building up in the river that eventually would have sealed off the port, the harbor at St. Louis, which of course would have been disastrous for business in St. Louis. And so the Corps of Engineers sent Robert E. Lee out there as a captain to take care of that problem, and he succeeded. The people of St. Louis owed him a huge debt of gratitude for saving the city.
And we owe you a debt of gratitude for coming in here on Friday and talking history with us, one of my favorite topics.
Me too.
Virginia and American history. Rick Britton, our guest, thank you, sir, for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a great week and Happy New Year to you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.